One of the things that I'll talk a little bit about, especially our last session, will be the traditional ritual means of coping with destructiveness and protecting oneself against destructiveness. That is, pre-modern means. Traditional societies understood far more about this than modern culture. Modern culture has managed to make itself so blind to evil that it, of all human history, modern culture is the most vulnerable to evil, because it stripped itself of the tools with which to talk about it. And so we are left with our pitiful little efforts to talk about the human destructiveness through psychopathology. We have these nice little case books and psychiatric nosologies. We can throw out a little term here and there, but being able to talk with any power about evil is not a modern phenomenon. Witness, for example, how difficult we have found it to deal with the Holocaust. And witness the attempts that constantly arise to split off our consciousness about the Holocaust, kind of deflect it, have us not look at it. Witness our attempts, on the one hand, to force Germans to carry our collective shadow, on the one hand, and to absolve them of responsibility on the other. It's very interesting kind of a double movement that you see, ways to avoid the human reality of the Holocaust, and by trivializing it, also trivialize the other Holocausts that are occurring all around us. A very interesting thing that is happening now in our world is an increasing incapacity of human beings to feel outrage at anything. It's a very interesting phenomenon. Just the sheer emotional capacity to feel outrage is lessening rapidly. And we want to reflect upon that type of thing. But in any case, I want to speak about this predominantly in this context, in the context of a psychology of the archetypal dimensions of human existence. And I want us to focus from a Jungian point of view, particularly on explication of the archetypal shadow. And I would like to make a clear distinction. We'll do this the third week when I really get into elaborating the Jungian concepts on this. Make a very clear distinction between personal shadow and archetypal shadow, because they are not the same thing. It is critically important that it be seen that they are not the same thing. And we have to get clearer, much, much clearer, about the complexity of the Jungian concept of the archetypal self. A little understanding of Jung will lead you to believe that the archetypal self is a good thing. In reality, it is a very ambivalent thing. And it contains, you know, we hear Jungians very often talk about how the archetypal self is the archetype of order. Well, what I would like to clarify for you is that that's totally incorrect. It is indeed, in one of its expressions, the archetype of order. It is also the archetype of chaos. And it is very important for us to see that, and we'll be looking at Ion, the volume in which Jung diagrams the self, in which Christ and Satan are seen as clear expressions of the archetypal self. they have radically different expressions in the psyche. They are both archetypal expressions of the self. They are both trying to incarnate and influence the ego. And there are some similarities about what happens when an individual is inflated through contact with the Christ dimension of the archetypal self to the kind of phenomena you get when an individual is inflated by the satanic aspects of the archetypal self. But those similarities do not mean in any way that these things are the same. And it's very important that we have this kind of understanding about the complexity of the ambivalence of the archetypal self. Because if you do not have that, then you will get the idea that everything that comes to you in dreams and active imaginations is friendly. And that is not the case. There are aspects of the archetypal realm which are hell-bent for your destruction. And it is very important to get some sense of that in the way it operates psychodynamically. Now, it's very interesting that it was not Jung at all that emphasized this dimension first. It was actually Sigmund Freud and his concept of Thanatos. The death instinct. And in these four sessions, I'll start out tonight. I'm going to stay at the archetypal level as expressed in myth and religion. Next week, I will talk about the inner enemy in Freudian psychoanalysis. I will focus specifically and particularly upon the way in which Freud's conflict theories really are reflections of this kind of point of view. And I'll focus on the death instinct, and then in terms of later object relations theory, I'll talk a little bit about the conceptions of the anti-libidinal ego in object relations theory. Translated out in ordinary language, that just means the anti-life ego. And we will be looking at something that Freud's have been very frank about until they have tried to clean everything up with some recent developments and not acknowledge as many of these destructive. Well, you know, contemporary Freudians are almost as nice as Jungians. You know. But in the classical Freudian tradition, they were more honest about human destructiveness. And I want us to look at those classical traditions. In the third week, I will focus more on Jungian conceptions, and I will elucidate this personal shadow and archetypal shadow, and we'll go into this self-psychology. And then the final session on April 26th, we will think together on resources for coping with this inner enemy that human beings have used throughout the centuries, and which in a postmodern world we need to reappropriate, in my view. This is an era which is very exciting for a reappropriation of ritual process. One of the marks of a dawning postmodern world will be a discovery of the power and necessity of ritual for human life to be relatively sane. One of the marks of modernity and modern culture was the assumption that humans can do without ritual process. They don't need it. It's superstition. You know, it was one of our Protestant fantasies that we got to get rid of this ritual stuff. It's all superstition. And so we get rid of ritual process, and then we are condemned to obsessive compulsive ritualizations. And you ritualize whether you like it or not. The question is, will you ritualize consciously, knowing what you're doing, or will you be forced to ritualize by your unconscious when your unconscious is trying to get you to be aware that you need more than simply goodwill. We will talk about some of the uses of symbols that have been made, the use of talismans that have been made throughout history. I'll talk a little bit about Jung's understanding of this type of thing. And I will talk a little bit about the relationship between spirituality and spiritual disciplines and the necessity for spirituality. You know, it's been widely known that Jung believed that, contrary to Freud's view, that if you did not have a spiritual practice of some kind, that you would likely be condemned to psychopathology for the rest of your life. And I think we will see very clearly why Jungians tend to be very aware of the importance of spiritual practice in the individuation process. And it's not just some nice little add-on, that somehow there is something going on in the psyche and in human experience that requires some sense of a trans-egoic force for good, the capacity to access some trans-personal, trans-egoic force for good in order to survive, not to thrive. So that's the plan in those four sessions.